This show has a content warning on it for a discussion of eating habits, changing eating habits, following specific diets, weight loss, and how all of this ties in to not just grief, but also living with an AUDHD neurodivergent brain. So I just wanted to let you know before the episode began. You're listening to Feather Mane Soul Wisdom, a podcast for those looking to rediscover their wild spirit in spite of life's challenges. If you're living with a chronic illness or neurodivergent or consider yourself disabled, and you're looking to connect with your own inner untamed essence, then this show is for you. Your host is Kit Kelsto, Wild Spirit Storyteller. Thanks for listening, and now on to the episode. Hi, I'm Kit Kelsto, host of the Feather Mane Soul Wisdom Show. Last time on the podcast, I talked about being diagnosed with alpha-gal syndrome, which is an allergic reaction to the alpha-gal molecule, which is found in mammalian products. Alpha-gal is so much more than a red meat allergy. If you hear it referred to as a red meat allergy, know that that is only the tip of a very wild iceberg. So being diagnosed with that and suddenly literally having my body create an allergic reaction to foods that I grew up with, to foods that I love. I mean, who doesn't love butter and cheese? Having that allergic reaction, that really changed everything. And on top of it all, I was diagnosed about a month ago, and it has taken probably 2 to 3 months of getting those foods out of my diet and also uncovering the hidden areas where those foods are. Basically, in the U.S., anywhere where anything says natural flavorings, they're not required to disclose what that source is. And so quite often, the enrichment in flour, the natural flavorings that they put in foods can be mammal-derived, which means it can all cause alpha-gal allergies. The other thing I've run into is that once I've kind of taken out the low-hanging fruit or the easy ways to remove mammalian products from my diet, no more beef, no more pork, no more butter, no more dairy products, or so I thought, then I'm discovering that there are areas of cross-contamination. And a great example is this weekend, I made a homemade pizza with turkey bacon and mushrooms. It's kind of our go-to these days, and it's very delicious. But I put regular Italian blend pizza cheese on half of it. And on the other half, I put my dairy-free cheese. And I did his side of the pizza first. And then I did my side of the pizza, but I didn't like wash my hands in between touching the two cheeses. I didn't use rubber gloves. I mean, I was making a pizza for my spouse and I. Well, I cross-contaminated myself just through that. And possibly through misjudging where the center of the pizza was when I cut it. And getting just the smallest amount of dairy cheese. And ended up kind of dealing with a low-grade alpha-gal reaction. But I'm starting to realize that those low-grade reactions are happening more often. Because I now know how it feels to feel good. And that's what has driven this episode. I want to talk today in relation to alpha-gal and eating compassionately and making food changes to not just the lived experience of those who have a neurodivergent operating system, to making those changes, but also the different ways that that has shown up in my life. And I'm doing this against the backdrop of grief. Now, this entire episode is not going to talk about grief, but I think you can understand that having to give up foods that you loved, you know, bacon, steak, butter, cheese, having to give up those foods, it causes grief. And so there's grief kind of woven throughout this story. I want to start by talking about the desire to change my eating habits because that happened a long time ago. I am somebody who is of a larger body size. And again, I realize there's a lot of factors that go into it, including my neurodivergence, trauma, eating patterns that I grew up with, being undiagnosed neurodivergent, and using foods to regulate my emotions. There's a lot wrapped up into that. Recently, or within the last few years, I've really wanted to move towards a plant-based diet. I really wanted to eat more compassionately towards animals. I have an associate's degree in agriculture. I am keenly aware of the dangers of big ag and just how inhumanely animals are treated throughout their life cycle by big ag. I've talked about having the family farm that I used to visit as a kid, and that environment is so far removed from most of today's agricultural operations that it's like another world. And so for the planet, because of climate change, for compassion out of the animals, I've wanted to move towards a more plant-based diet, but there were really two things holding me back. And those are executive function and my neurodivergence, safe foods, just being easier and taking up less cognitive load to do the grocery list and the menus every week. That's my responsibility. And the other half of that is finances, because it is more expensive to eat plant-based, mostly because in part because a lot of the processes to create these foods are not done on a larger scale. Also due to governmental decisions and subsidies to agriculture, as well as the fact that these companies know that people will pay more for them because they're perceived to be healthy, and so they jack up the prices. There's a little bit of all of that going into that. So I wanted to change my eating habits, but I really struggled to do so. One of the things that my spouse and I were doing before I got my diagnosis, driven in some part due to the high cost of hamburger and beef here in the U.S. because of inflation and several other factors, was we started eating plant-based burgers. So Impossible Burgers, Ultimate Burgers. Ultimate has a steakhouse burger that's really good. So we started eating that way. And I knew that was like one small step I could take towards eating healthier, towards being more plant-based, being more compassionate, as well as honestly just trying to see what's out there. Because the plant-based world is changing rapidly in the food. And there's a lot more options out there today than there was even a year ago, let alone 5 years ago. And so I really do encourage you to check out, if this is something you want to do, I do encourage you to check out all the options that are out there. Because like we found a plant-based mayo that's really good, plant-based butter that's pretty much like what I grew up with. It's country crock. So there's a lot of different options out there. And so just, you know, wanting to change, part of that was needing to have the executive function to actually make the change. And if you're familiar with ADHD, if you're familiar with autism, executive function, which is not willpower, but rather your brain's ability to make decisions and your brain's ability to move you forward on something that you want to do. It's one thing to want it. The other thing is to have the executive function to actually move forward with that. So that's part of it. The second half is being told that you have to change your eating habits. And I'm just going to warn you right now, this is going to probably be twice as long as a normal episode, and I'm totally okay with that. So you better be too. So there's the having to change your eating habits. I am getting older, and one of the things that, you know, as a larger bodied individual, my doctor always harps on is eat better, move more, eat better, exercise more. there is a big difference in being told to do those things and being told that you have to do those things and actually wanting to do those things. I have a bit of demand avoidance. Because it takes my autonomy away, because it takes away my ability to regulate myself, to regulate my nervous system, when someone tells me that I have to do something, I get a little prickly about it. I usually try to do it, or I try my best, or I kind of give it, you know, the old half-hearted try. But the truth is, something that I want to do is going to generate more executive function. It's going to generate more dopamine than something that I have to do. And you know what? I'm not alone in this. This is very common. I think for many of us, doing the things that we want to do is so much more important than what we have to do. And so when a doctor, when well-meaning family members, when friends tell you, you know, you really should eat better, you really shouldn't stress eat, that really makes it difficult to do that because there is this instinctive no that gets put up, even if you're not physically aware of it. And to be honest, even with the alpha-gal diagnosis, there is a bit of that there. You know, I'm only 3 months into this, and I'm getting really tired of reading labels and of thinking about every single thing that I try to eat. And that's going to come into play later on in the podcast. But like, so a great example, we're going to have some chicken and rice tonight. I've still got soy sauce in my kitchen from before the diagnosis. I now have to make sure that that soy sauce is fully plant-based before I use it for dinner. Otherwise, I'm kind of out of luck to have soy sauce on my chicken and rice or on any, you know, vegetable fried rice or Asian food. I really can't eat out anymore. One of the things I used to do on a weekly basis is you go to town, I get groceries, and kind of as my reward for that is I'd go through a drive-thru somewhere. I can do Burger King, and our Burger King, being familiar with alpha-gal because the manager has somebody with alpha-gal in his life, you know, I can do Burger King, but that's pretty much my only option. And let me be perfectly blunt here. As somebody with a food intolerance, the fact that I have to rely on a manager or somebody at any establishment that I am eating out to actually have somebody with that same condition in their family for them to show compassion and understand what cross-contamination really means and not get silly with it, as I've heard some stories about other restaurants, you know, being funny about using butter and stuff. That stinks. I mean, that's neurotypical bullshit right there. So, you know, the fact that my health and my well-being is in somebody else's hands, if I decide to go out and eat, I mean, that's kind of scary. And that brings me to the intersection between having to change and wanting to change. Now that I am farther enough along in this journey that I have basically cut nearly all, if not all, of the alpha-gal containing products out of my diet. Now that I'm far enough along in this, I'm starting to feel good, you guys. And I am starting to feel good, like I haven't felt this good in a few years. Now, the last probably 6 months, I have felt the worst that I have felt in my entire life, and I have felt pretty damn bad. So to have that switch flipped where some of my supplements are finally kicking in, my immune system, my body's kind of getting reset after getting most of the alpha-gal out of my system. I have switched to all vegan, you know, hygiene products, body wash and stuff. We're even really careful about like our toilet paper because lanolin and gelatin and other animal derived products is used quite a bit in a lot of the fancier toilet papers. So, you know, now that I'm getting all of that out of my system and I'm feeling good, I want to stay feeling good. I do not want to, as I call it, alpha gal myself. So what that means is that there's a switch there. The have to has now become a want to. And the want to is very strongly motivated by feeling better. And not only do I feel better, but I am also eating compassionately. And so I'm doing better. You know, I won't say that I am 100% perfect. I eat a lot of turkey. I eat a lot of chicken. Turkey bacon is my friend right now. I eat eggs, although I eat eggs primarily only from my own hens. So I know how these chickens are kept. I know how they're treated. They are not, you know, overcrowded in any way. They're not treated badly in any way. They're not debeaked. They're not, you know, forced to, kept in conditions that force them to lay eggs year round if they don't want to. Everybody can take the winter off if they want. I cry because then that means I buy eggs from the store. But, you know, I pretty much know how my chickens are kept, and my chickens are kept compassionately, and it doesn't bother them one bit when I go in and steal their eggs. They might get a little grumpy when I kick them off the nest, but I do so gently. So the fact that I am eating compassionately, the fact that I am feeling better, and the fact that I have made these changes is really kind of a watershed moment for me. I want to take a moment and I want to flashback about 22 years. So much different world. My father passed away in the early 2000s. And about a year after that, I knew I wanted to get healthy because I knew how unhealthy my mother's side of the family is. Again, due to a lot of different factors. I knew, you know, my dad had died very young from cancer, mostly untreated because he didn't have insurance. So I wanted to kind of buck the family trend to get healthy. I went on Weight Watchers and I lost over 90 pounds. And the way I did it was twofold. One, I increased my activity. I did a lot of walking, a lot of ground training with my horse. I also, because I lived in a place with nice sidewalks and had easy access to a gym, I also actually started running. It was kind of a funny ha-ha where I had gone out for the track team in high school because if I did shot put and discus, I didn't have to run. So it was kind of a funny ha-ha. I could be on the track team and not run. And they did, you know, make us do a 1 mile warm-up run every practice. But I walked most of it and that was fine and nobody cared. And so with that, I was like, well, I wonder if I really can run a mile. So I basically did a couch potato to 5K and actually ran a 5K. So super exciting. But between that and then the other side of that is that I was super, super restrictive with what I ate. I went on Weight Watchers. That was at the time that they were just really getting going with their points program. And I refused to eat any foods that were over 4 points. So I had like 4 point breakfast, 4 point lunch, 4 point dinner. If I did not eat my full points, that, but basically I considered myself a failure for that day. Now, I want to be very clear. That is disordered eating. That is overly restrictive eating. And because it was involved with my body size, even though I was still considered plus size or obese, even after I lost the 90 pounds, I got down to like an 18-20. No, I'm sorry. I got down to like a 14-16. So still, I was a larger size, and I could have lost more weight for my body frame. But that was anorexia. But of course, nobody looked at the fat girl and said, oh, you're anorexic. They said, good for you. You're losing weight. I was pretty much the star of my Weight Watchers unit, lost weight every week, really didn't plateau because I was restrictive as hell with myself. And once I got to about 190, I, you know, 185, I broke. You know, I hadn't eaten McDonald's in like 16 months, unless it was like a really small cheeseburger and that was it. So I got, you know, my usual meal, quarter pounder with cheese, large fry, large diet Dr. Pepper. And just like that, I was off the bandwagon. And pretty much I could not maintain that super restrictive diet over a long term. So, you know, and that was 20 years ago. But there's a difference because now I see myself losing weight. And I'm feeling those same disordered eating kick in. Not only am I concerned about my weight, especially since, you know, the doctors keep bringing it up, but also the fact that food can make me sick. And in fact, at any point, I could probably have an anaphylactic reaction from alpha-gal if I'm not super duper careful. I mean, so far, everything's just been, you know, fatigue, feeling icky, GI issues, brain fog, and pain. Joint pain. It's been mostly an inflammatory response. But the fact that that needle could tip at any moment kind of makes food dangerous for me. And all of this feeds in to being AUDHD or being autistic and having ADHD. And one of the tendencies of people with autism is to have very rigid rules. Now, when you add into that the trauma that I have endured in the way that I grew up, where I had to always be the good daughter, the good girl. And so when you add all of that together, what that means is that if I eat the wrong thing or I eat too much, there's that immediate feelings of shame, those immediate feelings of blame, those immediate feelings of, you know, lack of self-worth. There's, again, that old anorexia, I can tell it's starting to rear its head again. I've been tracking what I've been eating because it has protein in it. And I have not been getting enough protein in my diet, which has had some effects on my health that are thankfully being reversed. But as I track what I'm doing, it is very difficult to find a food tracking program that doesn't actually track with the intention of losing weight. So it tracks my calories, it tracks sugars, carbs, protein, and one of the things I have found is that if I eat less than 1,000 calories a day, my tracking app kind of yells at me, which I'm very happy for, frankly. I'm glad that it's not rewarding me. The rest of the time it tells me, you know, in 5 weeks you'll weigh X, as if that X number is my goal. And I look at that number and I'm like, oh, that would be kind of nice. But that number is not my goal. Feeling healthy is my goal. That's what's driving my wanting to change my eating habits. That's also what's driving me being afraid to eat in many cases or worrying about what I can eat. So where does that leave everybody? Well, as a neurodivergent individual, and that's really what I'm speaking to in this podcast, is I'm speaking about all the complexities of food as somebody who is neurodivergent with food intolerances or food allergies, that is actually so much more and is actually a very systemic inflammatory issue. In fact, you know, I'll be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if in 5 to 10 years they don't figure out that the tick bite and the introduction of the alpha-gal molecule actually doesn't trigger an autoimmune type disease, because that's how it very much acts. As somebody who has been subclinical for a great many things and not treated for them, but having to do a lot of research, I can tell you that the way alpha-gal acts in the body is very much like an autoimmune condition. My neurodivergence plays an extreme role in my food choices and in many ways in my grief over food. And the biggest thing, I think, is that no matter how unhealthy they were, my go-to stress eating foods were popcorn with a whole bunch of butter slathered on it, 3 tablespoons usually. Again, I'm saying this without judgment. My cholesterol is good, so I mean, it didn't really affect me. Probably worse, chips and dip have always been my stress eating food. There's a sensory seeking thing there. There's the crunch of the chips. There's the taste and coolness of the dip. There's the texture contrast. There's some carb and sugar cravings that happen, which try to feed the dopamine. There's a lot of reasons why chips and dip is my basically autistic stim food. And I don't have that anymore. I don't have the safe foods. I don't have, you know, hopefully as I continue to improve with my health, I'll get the energy back and I will actually feel like making mashed potatoes from scratch. But the mashed potatoes, the pots of Bob Evans mashed potatoes that I used to buy, because nuking a pot of mashed potatoes made a really good lunch, that's out of the question now because it has milk and butter and dairy in it. So a lot of my safe foods are gone. A lot of my safe foods are no longer an option for me because my safe foods now make me sick. That is huge. There's a lot of grief there, everyone. I want to do a special show just talking about the grief. And maybe even I'll try to get some people in the group to talk about the grief of food allergies and the grief of not being able to eat what everybody else eats. Y'all's food pictures on social media are kind of killing me right now because it all looks so damn good. And I remember when I could eat it and now I can't. And even if it's healthy, even if it would be perfectly acceptable within a plan where you're watching your protein, you're watching your fat, you're watching your carbs, I'm having to relearn so many things. And the grief in that, and the grief in not knowing if or when I'm going to alpha-gal myself, because in many ways it's a crapshoot. Depending on my stress levels, my histamine levels, I could tolerate something one day and the next day it'll have me flat on my back exhausted. Same food. One of the things I discovered a couple weeks ago, I used to be able, or I thought I could tolerate Dairy Queen. Dairy Queen isn't real ice cream. It's ice milk because of the fat the lower fat content. And you can Google it there, or DuckDuckGo it, or whatever search engine you use in this age. But Dairy Queen does not match the FDA definition of ice cream. And I thought because of that, I could tolerate it. So it's right next to the feed store. I get my feed. I get myself a little drink. I like the moo lattes, the ice cream and caramel and coffee. So good. Got a moo latte, and about 3 hours later, the symptoms hit me, and I was like, crap. I said worse than that, but try to keep this a family podcast. I said crap, and realized I could no longer eat Dairy Queen. And I swear to you, I swear, from beyond the veil, I heard my mother and her sister, my ancestors, I heard them just cry out in pain because a Dairy Queen blizzard was always a big treat for our family. There's grief there. There is sorrow. There is sadness. There is learning to live with a new reality. All of this with the rigid thinking, being neurodivergent, leads me to weight loss. And that's where I'm going to close here. And actually, looking at the time, this episode hasn't run quite as long as I feared it might. Again, as someone who has basically been told their entire life that they need to lose weight, I remember being extremely skinny as a kid. As soon as I got to school, as soon as I started getting bullied, the situation at home deteriorated. I started gaining weight. I have a lot of thoughts about what causes obesity, what causes weight gain. And I got to tell you, willpower is pretty low on the list. I believe there's a lot that goes on metabolically. I believe there's a lot that goes on trauma, neurotype, mental health. I believe that hereditary genetics, that plays a much larger role in weight loss than any amount of willpower ever can. I like to joke that my people are built for surviving long, cold, lean winters. They're not built for long hikes. They're not built for running away from predators. They're not built for anything but living on potatoes. With that being said, the weight loss is really a mixed bag. On one hand, as of this recording, I've lost about 10 pounds. Depends on my scale, the doctor's scale, but I've lost about 10 pounds. And that's been in about a month. It was June 30th the last time I was weighed. I was weighed again last week. I've weighed myself a few times in the middle. I don't weigh myself a lot. But I've lost about 10 pounds, which is on par for actual healthy weight loss based on what I learned the times that I've been in and out of Weight Watchers. They don't want you to lose more than 2 pounds a week. I'm losing a little bit more than that, but maybe not, you know, it hasn't been exactly 4 weeks. I'm happy that I'm losing weight. I would like to lose, if we're being honest, I would like to lose 20, 30 more pounds. Maybe that, I think, would be really good. I obviously would like to lose more than that, but 20 to 30, you know, that 10% number that we learned back in the early 2000s about losing 10% of your body weight sees measurable health benefits. I'd like to lose that 10% and then see where I'm at. I feel like the weight loss, there's also grief there because I feel like my medical providers aren't really seeing it and aren't really understanding what it means. I mean, I'm not sharing my food diaries with them. I'm not discussing my eating habits with them. I'm not discussing the fact that there is some disordered eating and food withholding going on. I'm not discussing that. And I'm obviously working on that both with myself, and it's something that I hope to be able to discuss with my therapist. We're just dealing with some other stuff first. When I say this because, especially for neurodivergent individuals who may be overweight, the weight loss is all anybody focuses on. There is grief in not being seen for your weight loss. There is grief in not being seen for what it is costing you. And while I don't wish alpha gal on anyone, And frankly, I don't wish it on myself. It's just here we are. I also believe in trying to find the silver lining that the alpha gal is what I needed to push me into changing my eating habits, because it actually taught me that I can feel healthy. And that's where I want to leave this episode, I think, is that being taught through food withdrawal, through withholding food, through changing my diet drastically because I had to, which then turned into a want to, really opened my eyes to, frankly, just how disordered our entire culture is around food. I don't believe that is looked at enough, because it's seen by neurotypicals as a willpower problem. They don't see the safe food. They don't see the grief around not being able to eat what you ate before or changing what you ate. They don't see the grief around not being seen for what it's costing you to make these changes. And I truly don't want these podcasts to be all about the failings of neurotypical people. And I don't want you to not all neurotypicals in my comments, because I think, much like a lot of the other isms in our society, and I don't think there's a word for it. If there is, somebody please tell me. But a neurotypism that is in our society, that's kind of built into ableism, if you want to put it underneath an umbrella, really doesn't get looked at enough, especially in this intersection of food, eating habits, compassionate eating, who gets to eat compassionately, why they're eating compassionately, what their neurotype is, weight loss, recommended guidelines, medical providers. It's all a big cluster, you know what. And I don't think people really quite understand what it means for people who are not neurotypical. Which is why, like I said, I really want to do a special show, just a show on food and grief. Or that might be a great thing for a round table. I might reach out to some of my contacts, see what we can do. I want to thank you for listening to this today. I was pretty vulnerable in this podcast. I was pretty honest about my current situation and what's going on. I know the podcast hasn't been quite every Sunday. It hasn't been quite as regular, due in large part to the health problems that I've been experiencing. Let me tell you, the fatigue that goes along with Alpha Gal and a couple of other things I had dealing with is no joke. And I am super happy to be on the mend. I hope you're happy for me, but if not, that's okay. You don't know me. The thing I want to leave you with is that if you are somebody who is struggling with food, whether that's because you want to eat healthier, whether that's because you want to eat more compassionately, whether that's because you want to eat better, if you're struggling with that, then you're not alone. You are not broken. You're human, trying to do a very human thing. I would encourage you to reach out to my grief circles. I am going to be revamping the grief circles. I have a neurodivergent grief circle once a month. And then if you are pagan or eco-spiritualist or polytheist, or just looking for a more earth-centered approach to grief, I also have a pagan grief circle. That information is on the website. They are free to sign up, although donations are very much appreciated to cover my time and costs. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to speaking with you next week. Thank you. You've been listening to the Feathermane Soul Wisdom Podcast, hosted by Kit Kailstow. Learn more about Feathermane Soul at feathermanesoul.com. As a wild spirit storyteller, Kit is passionate about helping those who are neurodivergent, disabled, or living with chronic illness rediscover their own inner wild spirit. Visit feathermanesoul.com to receive free gifts or book a free call with Kit to discuss how wild spirit storytelling can help you. Music is Running with the Horses by Purple Planet Music. This podcast is hosted on the Muse Charmer Media Network. Find out more by visiting feathermanesoul.com/show and following the links to the Muse Charmer Network. Please don't forget to like, subscribe, or follow wherever you're hearing my voice, or tell a friend who may be interested. Thank you.